Very good to be with you this afternoon. We have a topic under consideration, a question. And the question is, which two men did not see death? And so I'm calling this the Bible Literacy Project. So I'll explain that here in just a minute. But I believe it's just very important that we have understanding of the Scriptures. And this is so important that we know and we can speak about the Scriptures and we talk about it. And it's part of who we are and what we do. I promise I won't hold your suspense very long. Which two men did not see death? Well, it was Enoch, and that is found in Genesis chapter 5, verse 24, and Elijah, and that account is found in 2 Kings chapter 2 and 11. So I guess we can just turn it over to an invitation song tonight, because I'm pretty much answered the question. Well, you know, it can't be quite that easy. I want to look at something a little bit tonight, though, this concept of Bible literacy. And what that means, and what hopefully we can accomplish by studying some things and being able to talk about them and speak about them. And at the end, after we kind of meander around a little while, we'll come back to Enoch and Elijah and study this concept of these two men that did not see death. Before we go further, though, let's go to God in a word of prayer. Well, get ready, because we're going to talk about a lot of different things tonight. Hopefully something will catch your attention. There was something that is called the Bible Literacy Project. And I came across this a couple years ago. It was actually established in 2001 as a nonprofit group. And their desire and their goal was to try to get instruction of the Bible back into public schools. And so the Bible, as we know, some court cases, I guess back during the 60s, is when it all started, where this was the speaking of the Bible was removed from public schools, and it's just gotten further and further and further away. And so there was a group that came together and established, as I said, 2001, with the sole goal of finding a way to get the Bible taught in public schools again. In 2005, they published a textbook. It was called The Bible and Its Influence. And it was updated in 2011. And the idea behind it was not so much to try to teach the Scriptures and try to teach doctrine in the schools, but instead to kind of take a little bit of a backdoor approach, was to show how important the Bible was to understanding literature and understanding cultural things that we just take for granted. Because this, at one time, I could say, was a Christian nation. I don't know if we would say that anymore, but it was a Christian nation at one time, and ideals and concepts were founded upon biblical ideas. Texas is one of the states that has adopted legislation allowing for this type of course in high schools. And there was talk that San Angelo ISD was going to add it. There was talk that Ector County was going to add it. And I'll be honest, I don't know what's come of it. I came across this in 2012, I believe, was the year at a convention. And they were curriculum people there trying to push this curriculum. So I got some information on it and even got kind of a sample book. And to be honest, I don't think I've heard anything about it since then. So I don't know what's happened to this concept. But I will tell you one thing about Bible literacy. It's important. And educators realize it. They went through a group of educators and did some polling among teachers. And teachers will tell you, especially in literature, that people that don't have a strong Bible literacy, they say they're harder to teach. They don't understand as much because there's so many references and allusions to the Bible that's just in our natural vocabulary sometimes that we don't understand. And it's very important that we teach the Bible and people know the Bible and understand what it says. And we know the stories. And we don't just focus on, you know, little bits and pieces, but instead we understand the entire Scripture and we can take it as a whole. It makes us a much stronger believer, and it makes us a more intelligent person, to be honest with you, to be able to understand what the Bible has to say. This group conducted some research, and this was pretty formal. It was done by the Gallup group, the Gallup survey in 2004. 10 states determined the Bible literacy of teenagers. So this would have been about 12 years ago. So I guess that means we're kind of have a sample slice of people that would be in their late 20s right now. Kind of give you an idea of the group of people that were this poll was conducted on. So you ready for the results? Here's what the poll had to say. Well, some good news. A little bit of good news anyway. Strong numbers of American teenagers recognized the basic meaning of widely used Christian terms. They did. Words such as Easter, Adam and Eve, Moses, the golden rule, do unto others as you would have done unto you, the Good Samaritan. They knew that story. So there is a little bit of good news, is that teenagers in that time had some basic concept of some just traditional Judaic Christian beliefs. They understood parts of the Bible. However, we got some bad news. Only a minority of American teenagers appeared to be what was deemed Bible literate. And that was a level defined by a group of high school English teachers as necessary to have a good education. They were just not considered very Bible literate. We knew Easter, but we didn't know much more than that. We knew who Moses was. Well, sort of. We'll even get into that in a minute. There are some interesting stats. Here we go. Fewer than half of these 1,000 teenagers polled knew what happened at the wedding at Cana. And of course, that's the story where Jesus turned the water into wine. Less than half of those polled knew what happened at Cana. I'll be honest with you. Here we are 12 years later. I doubt if it's gotten any better. If anything, I think it's probably gotten worse. But less than half knew what happened at the wedding at Cana. Two-thirds could not correctly identify a quotation from the Sermon on the Mount from 4 answer choices. And two-thirds could also not explain what happened on the Damascus Road, given 4 choices. I looked at some of the statistics of it. Of course, I've kind of got a mathematical mind. One thing I look at, when you have multiple choice, and it'll tell you how many people chose each answer choice, anytime all 4 of your answer choices are in double digits, that means the kids are guessing. And nearly every one of these questions, it was 4, all 4 answer choices were all about 20%. That means the kids were flat out guessing. So even some of the ones who got it right didn't know. So two-thirds could not correctly identify which passage was out of the Sermon on the Mount. So that's a little bit deeper understanding than just knowing what Easter is and knowing who Moses is. A little more complicated. That's being Bible literate. One-fourth believed that the phrase, David was king of the Jews, was a false statement. That's kind of scary that they didn't know who David was in relation to the Bible. This is an interesting one. 1 in 10 believed that Moses was an apostle of Jesus Christ. In other words, they're just guessing. These kids have no idea. They hear the names, but they're not sure. We have raised a generation of kids that are Bible illiterates. And that's scary, because now they're going to be raising their own children, and it just becomes an exponential problem. It's a scary, scary situation. There's 2 reasons for Bible literacy that I want to talk to you about this evening. Number 1, the Bible often uses itself to develop arguments and base its teachings upon. So we need to understand what the Bible is talking about, so when we read it somewhere else, we understand the meaning behind it. A couple examples. In Matthew alone, Jesus uses examples of Sodom and Gomorrah. He talks about David and his men there with the showbread, and he talks about Jonah. And so if you didn't know who those people were, then all of that is meaningless in the argument that Jesus was creating. The Bible often uses itself to develop arguments and base its teachings. Now, I've learned this over the last couple of years trying to study my way through the book of Revelation. One thing I have realized, whether I understand anything or not, I will come across a passage and I will realize and recognize, oh, that is from the Old Testament. Now, I may not fully understand it, but I know that that has some Old Testament backing. And you get on the internet and Google that same phrase, and you will read some of the craziest things that people have come up with that have absolutely nothing to do with the original meaning of the phrase. They probably have no idea that it was found in the Old Testament. See, we don't have much Bible literacy. There's not a lot of Bible knowledge in the world, and when you don't know, then you don't understand the arguments that the Bible is using. And so what happens? Well, you make up your own things. That's scary. So that's one reason that the Bible is its own commentary, oftentimes I've heard it said. The Bible likes to use other biblical examples to describe and to define arguments. Secondly, our world is filled with references and allusions to the Bible. That was the gist of the Bible Literacy Project. They knew that they would never be able to get the Bible back into schools at face value. And so the idea was, well, let's talk about how important the Bible is in terms of government, in terms of literature, in terms of art and architecture, how all of these things fit together with the Scriptures. So that's interesting. I got some examples for you. See if you ever thought about these before. Have you ever thought about the titles of books and movies and poems that have something to do either directly or by allusion? And by the way, when I say allusion, what I'm meaning is you reference something without explicitly saying it. You may not quote it word for word, but it's obvious that you are implying a knowledge of something else. So that's what I mean by allusion. There's a book I read in high school called A Last Babylon. Read that book in the 60s. I guess there's a lot of these books came out like this that were kind of post-apocalyptic nuclear war type books. A Last Babylon was one of the ones that I read. Obviously, that's a reference to the book of Revelation. There was a book, or a movie, James Dean, East of Eden. Again, has biblical reference to it, to being kicked out of the Garden of Eden. John Steinbeck wrote a book called The Grapes of Wrath, and that is one of the most popular books, I guess, from the time of the Great Depression, The Grapes of Wrath. That's another reference to the book of Revelation. This one's a little newer. This is the governor, Arnold Schwarzenegger, had a book called The Sixth Day. Guess what that was in reference to? It was cloning. It was a movie about where these people were being created. Again, it had reference to the Bible, the idea of the sixth day. One of my favorite movies, called Brother, Where Art Thou? That is one of my favorites. Got some great music in it. George Clooney, and that one of the most interesting movies I've ever seen in trying to keep hold of that one. But again, Brother, Where Art Thou? Very similar to, Am I My Brother's Keeper? Similar phrase there. Biblical. There was biblical ideas throughout this movie. It was very interesting. And then Megan mentioned one today. Remember a poem called The Road Less Traveled? We were talking about that this morning. I couldn't remember who wrote it. We had to check it. It was Robert Frost. And Robert Frost talks about going in the woods, and he comes to the two paths. And the paths look good, but one's pretty nice and well-traveled, so he takes the road less traveled, and that makes all the difference. You got to thinking that is biblical as biblical can be when you start talking about the two roads. One road is broad and wide and leads to destruction, and then there's a road that's less traveled, and that's the one that makes all the difference. It's that straight and narrow path. So there's all sorts of examples in books, movies, and poems that are biblically based that if we don't understand some basic concepts of the Bible, we don't understand half of that. What about some characters? I just have a handful of these. Animal Farm was one of my favorite books because it was only about 50 pages long, so I read through this one. This was written by a man by the name of George Orwell. And it was about all these animals, and it was really a satire against communism and socialism is what it was. But anyway, these animals all got together. There was a raven who was leading these animals out of the farm. His name was Moses. That's pretty obvious characterization there, why his name was Moses. That was pretty obvious. Some may not be quite that obvious. A book called Great Expectations. That's Charles Dickens. Character, the victim of the story of Great Expectations' name was Abel Magwitch. You know why his name was Abel? Because he was the victim, just like Cain and Abel. But if you don't know who Cain and Abel are, you probably wouldn't pick up on anything important about the name Abel Magwitch. And one more, Cry the Beloved Country. There was a son whose name was Absalom. Well, that happens to also have something to do with the son of David by the name of Absalom. But if you don't know the connection, if you don't have any Bible literacy, then a lot of these names don't make any sense. And a couple more we'll be done. How about some famous quotes? I told Aaron I would use this one. Harper Lee's book, To Kill a Mockingbird. And she just passed away last week. To Kill a Mockingbird, Atticus Finch finishes the story with, Let the dead bury their dead. Straight, direct quote out of the Bible. Brave New World. This is another one of those science fiction type apocalyptic books. Suffer the Little Children. Direct quote once again from the Bible. I got one more for you. This one's elegant. It's by Longfellow, Henry Longfellow. He's a poet. Get all this. Wild with the winds of September, wrestled the trees of the forest as Jacob of old with the angel. Poetic. Longfellow He had a lot of Bible literacy. I was reading some. He had several. I didn't understand three-fourths of what he was saying. But you can get the gist that the wild winds of September wrestled the trees like Jacob wrestled the angel. But if we don't know the story of Jacob wrestling with the angel, then the image is completely shot. And so that's why these school teachers were saying, if kids don't have a biblical background and biblical knowledge and they have biblical illiteracy, they're much, much harder to teach. Because you have to go back and stop and explain all of these different little areas and different little phrases that are turned. But you got to be careful. Oh, we can't talk about the Bible in schools. But folks, it's all over the place. This is a great quote. Or I'll come back. I have a great quote in a second. I want to read you from a teacher. But what about examples from our country? Brother Paul will appreciate some of this. George Washington said, "It is impossible to rightly govern the world without God and the Bible." I can't imagine any of these guys running for office right now that stand up and make that statement. I'd be very surprised. Then I found this from Abraham Lincoln. This is in his second inauguration from 1864. "It may seem strange that any man should dare to ask a just God's assistance in wringing their bread from the sweat of other men's faces. But let us judge not, that we be not judged." Abraham's quoting the Bible. It's amazing how it all fits together. But if we don't have understanding and knowledge of the Scriptures, a lot of this stuff doesn't make any sense. Here's my quote. Now, I wish they'd have told me who said this, but this was one of the teachers who was involved in this research. You can teach excerpts from the Quran. You can teach from Buddhism, from New Age stuff. You can do all those things. Teachers will teach things like The Exorcist in class, and then you can't teach the Bible? That's ridiculous. And I agree with them wholeheartedly that we've gotten to this point where we are scared to say anything that even remotely might be considered biblical. And what a shame it is, because we have so many kids now that don't have Bible literacy, so they don't know what all this means. They don't have a full understanding of knowledge of literature. I had some Shakespeare quotes. I was going to put some of them. Shakespeare has Bible literacy. Milton, wow, Milton is unbelievably biblical literate. But there's all these ideas and these great authors, and we talk about these great and wonderful things, and then we can get into music and talk about these great composers and the songs that they wrote. And you know what? If you don't have Bible literacy, we are blind to a large majority of what is being said. And what a shame that is. So I believe Bible literacy is important. So what I'm trying to do here by the schedule, and so I took time out to explain this, every month we've kind of picked a little topic. The topics usually aren't very deep. It's not like some of the ones that we've addressed over the last couple months here. But sometimes it's just a concept that we need to know. And our kids need to know. And Drew and Aaron and Jake need to know. And eventually Sonora needs to know. And all these kids and the kids that we are around, we need to be able to teach the importance of Bible literacy. And we'll begin, I'm going to try to put these things together. I even came across a quiz. And it's kind of disheartening sometimes. Because I'll be honest, there's some of the stuff, the stories that I'm not picking up on. And that's so important that we have a large amount of Bible literacy. So I'm going to say right now, we all have a responsibility to increase our Bible knowledge. And we all have a responsibility to teach the younger generation. So we need to be able to explain and to teach, and we need to talk about it. And as we talk, our words and our vocabulary should be peppered with biblical things and biblical knowledge. And I think that's important. Sometimes we don't. Our examples, if possible, should be biblical examples. So when Matthew and Lauren are here, we need to talk Bible things. We need to have biblical phrases that we use, because that's where people get understanding. So much is just from our conversation. We must recognize the influence of the Bible in day-to-day life, and we need to appreciate it. We need to appreciate the wisdom that the Bible leads for us. And so that is the basis of Bible literacy. And that's what the Bible Literacy Project was all about. So I'm going to kind of piggyback on what they say, and hopefully in our little corner of the world, in our little sphere of the kingdom, that we will be Bible literate. And we will be able to pass that on to future generations. that when people come up and talk about Absalom, we're going to know what they're talking about. We're going to understand, know the story of who Absalom was and what he did and how he died and how he looked. And then we'll have a further understanding when we read about Absalom in a novel somewhere. That's my goal. So now, let's talk about Enoch. Or the two men that did not die or that did not see death, Enoch and Elijah. So here's Enoch. In Genesis chapter 5, verses 21 through 24, there is not a lot said about Enoch. Because we're usually more concerned about his descendants. One was a guy named Methuselah, was his son. We've talked a lot about him. And then later on down the line, we get to Noah. We don't talk much about Enoch, but here's what it says about him. It says, Enoch lived 65 years and begot Methuselah. And after he begot Methuselah, Enoch walked with God 300 years and had sons and daughters. So all the days of Enoch were 365 years, and Enoch walked with God, and he was not, for God took him. That's all it says. It says he walked with God. Let me back up one step. As you read through the lineage, it's got a set order. It'll talk about how a man was born, who he begot, what he did, and when he died. Begot, what he did, and when he died. But then we get to Enoch. It tells us who he begot. It said what he did. It says, but he didn't die. It says God took him. I don't know what that means. I don't know if that meant, oh, Enoch was walking down the street one day and God lifted him up. I have absolutely no idea. But all I know is what the Bible says, that God took him. He's mentioned a couple other times. One is in the book of Jude. In Jude verse 14 and 15, gives us a little bit more understanding of Enoch. It says, now Enoch, the seventh from Adam, prophesied about these men also, saying, behold, the Lord comes with 10,000 of his saints to execute judgment on all, to convict all who were ungodly among them of all their ungodly deeds, which they have committed in an ungodly way, and of all the harsh things which ungodly sinners have spoken against him. Can you pick out the main idea of the phrase of Jude? I believe four times he uses the word ungodly. So while Enoch walked with God, he spoke out against the ones that were ungodly. And four times it mentions the ungodly this and the ungodly that. And he spoke out against these people. So he was the seventh from Adam. Is there significance in the fact that he is in generation seven from Adam? Probably. But I don't know, have enough to tell you. But I would guess there has to be something important about that. Enoch is also mentioned in Hebrews chapter 11. And a lot of times we refer to this as the faith Hall of Fame or the roll call of faith. This is where the writer of Hebrews goes in and just picks out different men and women and says, learn from their faith. Well, by Enoch, he says in verse 5, that Enoch was taken away so that he did not see death and was not found because God had taken him. For before he was taken, he had this testimony that he pleased God. But without faith, it is impossible to please him. Now, we quote that all the time. Do you realize that was in the context of talking about Enoch? But without faith, it is impossible to please him. For he who comes to God must believe that he is, and that he is a rewarder of those who diligently seek him. So it says explicitly that he did not see death. I don't know what that means. But the Bible says that Enoch was taken up. So he was one of the two men that did not see death. So we know that the Bible tells us that Enoch walked with God. Oh, well, that's important. He just didn't believe in God. He didn't just love God. He didn't talk about God. The Bible says he walked with God. He was right there with God in anything and everything, and his words were of God and his thoughts were of God. And if we can take anything from this lesson, is that we need, number one, to walk with God. Number two, he also taught others about God. And we get that from that phrase in Jude. It talks about how he taught and how he spoke out against those that were ungodly. And then thirdly, we learn that he was taken by God without seeing death. I can't tell you exactly what it means. All I can tell you is what it says. One more, and that's Elijah. Elijah was also said to have been taken without seeing death. In 2 Kings chapter 2, verse 1 says, and it came to pass when the Lord was about to take up Elijah into heaven by a whirlwind, that Elijah went with Elisha from Gilgal. So he knew. Elijah knew he was about to be taken up. Whatever that means. Verse 3, now the sons of the prophets who were at Bethel came out to Elisha. Let me tell you, Elisha wasn't happy about it. and said to him, "Do you know that the Lord will take away your master from over you today?" And he said, "Yeah, I know. Be quiet." Basically, "I know. Keep silent." And he had to repeat that a couple of times because people kept saying, "Hey, isn't today the day that your master is going to be taken up from you?" And Elisha apparently is getting a little aggravated. I know. Just be quiet. I don't want to talk about it. And so he knew this was coming. 2 Kings chapter 2, verse 9. "And so it was when they had crossed over that Elijah said to Elisha, 'Ask, what may I do for you before I am taken away from you?' And Elisha said, 'Please let a double portion of your spirit be upon me.'" And Elijah said, "Ooh, that's a tough one." He said, that's a hard thing to ask. He says, "But I tell you what, if you see me taken from you, then you know that God is going to take care of that. He'll give you that double portion if you see me taken." And so guess what happened? Chapter 2, verse 11. "Then it happened as they continued on and talked that suddenly a chariot of fire appeared with horses of fire and separated the two of them, and Elijah went up by a whirlwind into heaven." What does that mean? I don't know. I can't imagine what that scene was like for a chariot of fire to fly down out of heaven and pick up Elijah. I can only imagine what Elisha was thinking as he just stood there and watched the whole spectacle. But that's what the Bible said, that there were two men that did not taste death. They were taken up, Enoch and Elijah. So what about Elijah? I didn't realize this. He's the fourth most referenced Old Testament character in the New Testament. I wouldn't have thought that. I'll give you a second to try to think of the top three, but Elijah was number four. And secondly, he was taken by a chariot of fire into heaven. So in conclusion, I believe Bible literacy is very important, and it's important for different reasons. One reason, again, it gives us a fuller understanding of the Scriptures and the arguments made by the Lord and the writers of the New Testament. And so as we begin to read and Jonah is referenced, or Balaam is referenced, or Sodom and Gomorrah is referenced, and all these things that we find in the New Testament that are given as examples and reasons why we should or shouldn't do things, when we have great Bible understanding and knowledge, it gives us a fuller understanding. And those that don't have Bible literacy, half the time won't know what they're talking about. And I'll give you a reference from Revelation that I remember. There's something about a mark on the forehead. And if you don't have any Bible literacy, you don't know that that comes from the book of Zechariah. So that means you think it's a barcode that the federal government's going to put on, and you start taking off into left field before you know it because you don't have Bible literacy. It's so important for us to have a fuller understanding of the Scriptures. And secondly, it gives us a fuller understanding and appreciation of the world around us. Now, I'll save this one for last. Did you pick up the last one? 1981, a movie came out called Chariots of Fire. Again, it's a biblical reference, but if you don't have Bible literacy, then you don't understand at all the connotation from where that word came. So it's very important that we have great Bible literacy, and we're going to do our part to take care of it here. Number one was Moses, most mentioned. Number two, David. Number three, Abraham. And number four was Elijah. I don't think God had picked up on that. So, that concludes the thoughts for this evening. The lesson is yours. So as we study which two men did not see death. We never like to close, though, without having a song of invitation. If there's any who need the help of the church, we stand ready to assist you this time. I got to erase it, though.